Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks for giving this episode a listen. It's a good one. We've got SI Media Podcast regular Chris Long, who is always excellent to speak to on the show today. Get his perspective on the announcement last week by Raiders defensive lineman Carl Nassib about becoming the first active gay NFL player. So we get Chris's take since he's been inside those locker rooms and played with Michael Sam. We also talk up to Chris about the issue of some NFL players not getting vaccinated, especially the Buffalo Bills, and how he'd handle being teammates with Cole Beasley and how he'd try to handle that situation. And we also get into, what it's like doing a podcast for him as a post NFL player. And then we talk about the 4th of July weekend coming up. Hope all of you out there have a good one. Get Chris to talk about burgers and dogs and 4th of July versus Labor Day and Memorial Day. So it's a good pod with Chris for your 4th of July weekend. And then Sal Licata will join the show with me, as he has done the last 3 weeks, for the new Train of Thought segment at the end of the pod, where we talk about Tom Brady, the Yankees, Britney Spears, and Scottie Pippen. So that's all on this episode. If you missed previous episodes, check them out in the archives. Jim Ross from AEW Wrestling, legendary WWE announcer, and John O'Ran were on the show last week. Stu Gatz a couple of weeks ago from The Lebatard Show. Doris Burke, Evan Longoria, recent guests as well. So check those out. Subscribe, rate, and review. All right, here we go with Chris Long from the Greenlight Pod, former NFL player, Super Bowl champion, and good guy. Here we go. All right, joining me now, SI Media Podcast regular, one of my favorite guys out there from the Green Light Pod and a Twitter shit stirrer.
No, not anymore.
Oh, yeah. You still, with that hockey business, you still.
I mean, hockey's never, you never close that business. You close other businesses and then you just make hockey the breadwinner.
No, you stir it up pretty good.
I've changed.
It's funny because, when the Nassib story happened, I thought you'd be a great guy to talk to. But I try not to ask you. I don't want to ask you to come on all the time. And then when I look, you haven't been on since December. So
that's crazy.
Yeah. I think what happened, I think I did yours.
You've done mine twice. So
that's what it is.
It feels like we've kept up, but I'm really excited to be on. This is my favorite pod. This is probably my favorite podcast to come on.
Such a liar.
No, I'm not lying.
Really?
Yeah, probably.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, no, because if I'm on Ryan's, it's like his brain is just nothing against your brain. Like, I just feel like his brain is working a million miles an hour and I got to keep up with him. And then if I'm on Dan and PFTs, I don't know if they're busting my balls half the time because everything's a ball bust. And then, I just talk to my buddy Jimmy.
So we can't have 7 months without you on the pod. So we had to fix that. I honestly, to give people a little backstory, I texted Chris. We were texting about setting this up, and I texted you yesterday, the day before, and I said, should I email a Zoom link to you or your producer? And you wrote back to you or your assistant or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you wrote back something like, yeah, that's good. And I thought you were fucking with me.
I'm just a terrible text reader.
But that's a good way to mess with someone.
Well, no, you were like, are you seriously messing with me? I was like, no, I'm chasing the kids. And as I'm chasing the kids, literally 70% of anything somebody texts me, I might as well not. What I need to be better about doing is ignoring people all day and then checking my text once at night. If I could do that.
That's unrealistic. I
really want to do that. I've been trying to work on this do not disturb system where I can literally be away from my phone all day until nighttime.
Zero chance. You're living in la la. Here's what you should try to do. And I told you this, when you're with your kids running it, that's when you should shut the phone off.
Mm-hmm. It's hard because I work. So the trade-off of being autonomous and working kind of for yourself and answering to yourself and that sort of thing, which of course changes today. So shout out to Blue Wire. I gotta get that in. Now I have a pseudo boss, but I make my own schedule and I'm trying to be as home as much as I can be home. But what you learn in that experimentation process is if you're home and you're working kind of 70% of the time, your wife, your kids would probably rather you just be at work. They don't want dad staring at the phone. So you walk a bit of a tightrope, when you try to make your own schedule, because if you're off, you need to be off.
You have a great setup because you have an office. So you can just go to the office to stare at your phone. You don't have to do it in front of your wife and kids in your house.
No, it's nice. But, you know, I love being around my kids, man. I love just sitting with them when they're playing and building shit in the playroom. I love like kind of sitting on the back porch. They're running around. Like, that's all valuable time to me, even if I'm answering the 15 texts that I have from my production team or, you know, from the foundation or just somebody wants a FaceTime. I think that's the hard thing is, I think the one thing I wish I was better at was just saying no and making myself less available.
Well, I mean, listen, the vibe I get from you, we've never discussed this even off the air, but the vibe I get from you is that you're still in that post NFL carving out your whole, you know, you had to build up your pod and now you've got, you know, you've always had the foundation, but you seem like a guy that like, you're not going to take, like you could, in essence, if you wanted to, I mean, you have deals with the pod and you got to turn around. If you wanted to, you could take 2 weeks off. You could take 3 weeks off.
I
suppose
I
could.
I haven't done it since I retired, and that's the problem.
But that's the beauty of you being your own boss.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think some people, if you're doing what you like, and this is cliche, you're not really working, right? Which don't tell my wife that because, hey, I'm going to work, but I'm going to work to talk to Charles Barkley, or I'm going to work to rank Spindrifts, or, you know, do some bullshit that a lot of people would look at as not work, but it pays the bills. I mean, people like that kind of stuff that, you know, you can do a podcast, have fun, and people can have fun listening to it. But I think it's the complications in life that you can create a ton of complications for yourself. That you learn to like shed pretty quickly in retirement. I think one of the craziest things is I'm a workaholic a bit of a workaholic. I get that. And I don't think that's unhealthy necessarily. I was talking to somebody recently who's like, he was 65 and he wasn't going to retire for another 10 years. And I was like, he was bracing for me to say he was crazy. I don't think you're crazy.
Right.
I think you should work. I think you should keep your mind active if you so choose and you don't think it's fucking up your life or complicating it. For me, the hardest part is like setting boundaries and saying like, I can be a workaholic. I can create a fuck ton of content, but I'm also not going to say yes to everything. Like, I want to go on other people's pods. Well, I can't say yes to every pod.
Right.
You know, I want to do other projects. I have a ton of ideas. Well, not all those ideas are important or pressing. Then one of the biggest things you learn like in retirement is like push it down the road a little bit. Like procrastination is a good thing in retirement. Where it wasn't in my last line of work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, listen, I sort of think maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'm of the belief that no matter what you do, like what we do is fun. Like this is fun what we're doing right now.
Yes.
But it's still a situation where, and this isn't going to, it's going to come off as like, I have no business saying this, but I'm just saying, I think no matter what your job is, whether you love your job, whether you hate your job, whether your job is doing what we do or something else, if you have it where, like, we had to be on these computers at 1:45, like when you have to be on a schedule, you know, you have probably something after this. I had to write a column before this. And like, yeah, it's all fun. But if the choice is like, do all this or like spend the day at the beach, I'd rather spend the day at the beach.
Yeah, I probably would. And I think part of, you know, like,
I'm saying that because it's like 98 degrees.
No, there are nuances. And you'd be wrong today because you couldn't catch me dead at the beach. Now you could catch me on a river, which we talk about that a lot on the podcast. Rivers, then lakes, then the beach. Okay. But what you can be a workaholic and enjoy it. But I think where it gets to be a struggle is when you're not focused on any one thing for an extended period of time. And like what I have become at times in my life is like a jack of all trades. You know what I mean? And you know how that saying ends. Well, like I run a foundation. I have two kids that I try to pour my entire life into and I should put them first. You know, I have a wife that I love. I have a family that I love. And I'm also somebody that like, I definitely feel almost to my detriment time slipping away. Like I'm that type of person. Like I don't like wasting time. I feel like I'm 100 years old. I feel like everything's behind me and I feel like I have to hurry up to get everything I need to get done. And the problem is you say yes to too many things. You overextend yourself and you try to bite off more than you can chew. And to your point, then you're working an hour on this, an hour on that, an hour on another thing, where I'm the type that I would love to bury myself in something for 8 hours. Like that's my kind of like, if I have an interview that I'm really nervous about, that's going to make me prep and I'm going to have this person, this guy or girl for 90 minutes to 2 hours. And I'm going to talk to him like a Rogan thing. That's what I love. Like I love burying myself in that one thing, but when it becomes like, damn, I got to think of this little segment here Now this piece of news popped up that I'm not that interested in. I got to spend a little time on that. Oh yeah, I got a foundation meeting after that. Then I said yes to these five things. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you're your own boss, so you can easily blow off some things if you wanted to. You got to get better at that.
I do. No, yeah. I know you're right. People. Right,
so this was a good day to talk to you because there was a big announcement for Greenlight Pod today.
Yep. Blue Wire podcasts and WinBet. I mean, that's who I work for now. And I'm excited about it because, you know,
so
me,
wait,
I
when
wouldn't
you
sign...
say work for, when you say work for, like they don't own the Greenlight Pod, do they?
No, but they're going to help us distribute it. That's where you're going to be able to. Right. So, you know, the biggest thing now is like there's a huge network of awesome podcasts at Blue Wire. And I'm saying that very like honestly. There's so many great opportunities for us to cross-pollinate. I think that's one of the biggest things. If you're listening to like Lisa Leslie's pod and we talked about something the other day, well, it might be football and maybe she's not as interested in it. And she wants to kind of, you know, I just used her pod as an example because that's somebody I'd be really excited to like, you know, do a crossover with. But like they can use a clip from us talking about race norming in the NFL, or, you know, like you're able to kind of lean on other podcasts and, hey, say I want to do a WNBA thing. Well, I can bring Lisa Leslie on, or I have access to, I already got hit up by somebody who does sports movie reviews. And there's an entire podcast about that. And it's a Blue Wire pod. And they're like, we're excited. You know, we've seen you've been reviewing old football movies. Come on, join us. Like, that's good for us. Like, it's good for that podcast because they can fill some air with us. It's good for us because people are like, oh, these guys don't suck. You know, this guy doesn't suck. And, you know, more than anything, hopefully it grows the audience. And WinBet's awesome because I've been going to the Win for years and they've been taking my money and now they got to pay me. So it's like it's poetry for me. I mean, it's cool. And it's also more than anything, like I really don't give a shit about the money's cool. You know, like the perks are great, but more than anything, it lets people know that what you're doing is we are a commodity. Like we've been busting our ass for 2 years and people are like, oh, that's going well, which is a really hard thing to figure out when you're seeing your friends make content. I don't know how well it's going. I know what I like. I know what I don't, but I don't know how that pod's selling. I don't know how many people are listening to it. And it's really good for us to be able to say, hey, we didn't make it, but we're moving on up.
Well, you have made it. The pod's very successful. I know how hard you work at it. I know how well it does, but I got to call a little bit of bullshit. I want to talk about the perks. Does this mean now anytime you go to the Win, free room?
I don't know about that, but
often now will you be at the Win?
You'd have to talk to my lovely wife about that. Listen.
Does your wife like Vegas? Because that's a huge... Because some people don't like Vegas.
She does like Vegas. Okay, and I like Vegas. I don't like Vegas as much as everybody else, but I really like Vegas. Time and a place. Really like Vegas. And I will love going to Vegas to make content. Like they converted something. They tore out some brick and mortar stores at the Wynn. And they're putting in like a bunch of content factories, essentially, like these sets and stuff. And you can do activations there and all types of stuff. So like, I'm just excited, man. Like are you kidding me? Like I'm getting paid to do this. I mean, like I'm just excited and I won't change. We won't change. I think that was one of the biggest things for us. Like I had somebody be like, you went corporate, you had a fucking Win polo on. I'm like, my joke is I never wear polos.
Right. Right.
Well, yeah, if they're paying me, I'm gonna wear a polo. And by the way, it was breathable. So it was really low effort. And at this point, I just want to let people know if you're listening and you're worrying our pod's going to change, it's not because I wouldn't sign up. You know me, Jimmy. I wouldn't sign with somebody that was going to tell me what to do. And I've had opportunities to go elsewhere. And I just got the idea that, hey, like, it's not that I'm not okay with sharing the ball, but I want to do what I want to do with the ball.
I love the fact that you make this deal with the Win and they're going to become a partner of yours. You wear a polo and that's considered selling out. That's
the most selling out I'll do, Jim. And listen, for better or for worse, it's not going to change. If the pod changes in any way ever, it's because we got tired of doing something we were doing or we think something sucks.
I just want to know if you're going to Vegas every week. That's, you know,
fuck yeah,
once a month. Like, what do we? No, but let me ask you this though. How are you? You're not, you're what, like 35, 36?
36.
Now, I know I'm a couple of years older than that. I feel like I'm too old for Vegas now. Like,
no.
you're a football player, so you'll never be too old
for
Vegas.
You're never too old for Vegas. The casino just changes.
No, but I'm saying the night stuff and staying out all night and this, you know, now I'm at the age where it's more like, let's go to the pool, have a nice dinner, go see, you know, Britney when she's free and can get back to doing shows. And then
there was one night I was at a club in Vegas. I don't remember which one, but in my 20s, I hit Vegas or Miami and I'd hit them hard because, like, I was a 20 something year old NFL player and I felt like
that's why you become an NFL player.
Like, yeah, what's the point of them paying you all this money and like you being able to do, you got to at least try to do this shit and stay up till 6 a.m. and like, you know, pay too much for bottles. Like, yeah, it's not all it's cracked up to be, but it's pretty cool. But I remember one time there was an NFL player in one of those clubs and he's like, he played in the 70s. So just to give you his age, I'm not going to say who, cause I don't want this to appear like I'm disparaging somebody. Everybody gets one good fucking out of place club night in their 60s.
It wasn't Howie, was it?
No, it wasn't Howie. Howie doesn't even really drink. But this guy was at a table and he was surrounded by, you know, objectively for people listening, especially in a dimly lit room, like beautiful women. And, you know, he had bottles and he was wearing like a bad Oxford and some baggy jeans. Like he obviously hadn't been out in a while. Like something like, or if he's been out a lot, like he just, this is his uniform. But I felt kind of bad for the guy. I was like, bro, I would trade places with you and be you in a heartbeat. You were like an amazing player. But I just don't want to, like, there's certain spaces that I feel like you kind of outgrow and you won't know you've outgrown them until it gets to that point. And yes, you've outgrown Vegas when it comes to like going to a club. I actually don't think that for sure. It just got to be the right club, right, like, right setting, that sort of thing. But you'll never outgrow like sitting in a casino, watching March Madness, Topgolf, day drinking.
So me and my friends used to go every year for the tournament. Every March we went for like four, 5, 6 years in a row.
The tournament.
And the last time I went, it felt like the expiration date might have passed on this now. Because, you know, you just see everyone else. It is a place for the 20 somethings.
Man, listen. in Charlottesville, there's a corner, which is the campus, and then there's the downtown mall. And like in your 20s, you can catch yourself going back to the corner a lot, especially because you're a football player. And like, you know, that's where those were the bars you used to hang out with. And there's still guys you knew that are still playing. You wake up one day, you go out to the bar. And you realize pretty quickly that you're too old. Like, it's just one night teaches you that lesson. And for my wife and I, my wife's 35 years old and absolute smoke show, in my opinion, and looks, you know, to be much younger than she is. She's at a bar and some 22-year-old girl and her got into a disagreement by the bathroom. And the girl actually said to her, like, what's your old ass doing in here anyways? And we were 28 years old. And by the way, my wife looked younger than that girl at the time. But what you realize is that, like, age, like, these young kids can sense it. You know, like, even if you're cool, even if you look young, even if you can hold your alcohol, like, there's places that you have no business sharing spaces with 22 and 23 year olds.
Right.
And it was from that night on, my wife, who usually would have choked the girl, like, over that, was just like, we don't need to be here anymore. And that's when we stopped going to the bars on the corner. Now we'll still go there on like a special occasion, but we hang out up downtown. And so it's the same thing with Vegas. Like the minute you realize it, you're too old for it, you trust your gut and there's other things to do, but it's not Vegas. It's just the activities you decide to do in Vegas.
So if I go back, can you get me a discount at the Wynn?
Probably so. I don't want to just the first day willy-nilly be making promises that I can't, but
I'll plug green light every day.
Okay. You just walk out of the elevator. Like, have you guys heard green light? It's fucking good.
Yeah, exactly.
No, we haven't.
The guy at the bar who played in the 70s, it wasn't OJ, was it? Because I know
it was not OJ.
Because he's in Vegas.
I would have said OJ.
How about the balls of OJ that he goes to these bars and places like nothing ever happened?
I mean, seems like the type of guy that would do something like awful and just not be concerned with it. I mean, listen.
I just
I don't want to get started on the OJ thing.
Every few weeks on TMZ, it's like, you know, OJ at the bar, surrounded by people. It's like, wait, what? The guy's there, two people are dead. What are we doing?
I've never heard OJ talk in the last 20 years without like that TMZ sound before the video starts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always dun-dun-dun-dun. Hello, Twitter world. Like, that's how I hear, that's how I consume OJ now.
Yeah. We're going to do a complete shift of gears. So when Carl Nassib last week posted his video, the next day, 24 hours later, I wrote a column for SI.com, Train of Thoughts, and said I was disappointed in the lack of public support from star NFL players. Now, of course, Twitter has no reading comprehension, so they were like, well, Warren Moon said something. Well, he played 50 years ago. I know you're with me on this. Like, we don't like it when someone goes on Twitter looking for Twitter clout and trying to be a hero. Like, hey, this is so good. You want it to be somewhat meaningful. I thought in this case where this guy has to deal with teammates and peers every day, you know, it'd be nice if he was reassured, like, hey, everything's cool. This is great. Let's do it. It was J.J. Watt, Saquon Barkley, who is technically a star, but never plays. And when he does, averages like two. But like, where were the big stars?
God's fucking good, though, by the way.
Well, like, you have to play. You have to play sometimes, though.
I know, but I'm just telling you.
Is my take that it would have been nice for more big names to come out and say something wrong? Or as an ex-NFL player, did you want to see a little more, you know?
Hey. I've just gotten so out of like keeping score on like what people are doing, what people aren't doing. Cause I think and it's inevitable. Sometimes you grow really frustrated. Like I did that with the Carl Nassib thing in a totally different way. I just think we've gotten so in a place where we'll just analyze everybody else's takes, not what's going on. But I agree with you. I do think more NFL players should come out and say, hey, good job, man. Like, if the NFL, like, I know that there's one or two schools of thought here. Like, one, you know, if it's not a big deal to the guys in the NFL, which I think for a lot of guys, it's really not a big deal, then maybe they're not feeling like they have to put that out. Like, two, like, guys don't necessarily use Twitter the same way that we in the media do. Like, they're posting about whatever bullshit they want to post about. They don't feel like when something happens that now I have to like give my take, you know, but I think fair. JJ Watt did a great job of stepping up and saying like, hey, you know, hey, congratulations. I mean, I thought Joe Reed, who went to UVA, is not a star, said something. And I noticed a couple players and that sort of thing. You mentioned Saquon. I didn't see that. You always wish it was more like, listen,
I can only
speak for myself.
Right.
And I just know that I was extremely happy for him. Like, I was just psyched for him, dude, because Carl Nassib is a good dude. I've talked to Carl. Like, he's tight with my buddy Bo because they played in Tampa for a year. I mean, he was one of many white defensive ends that got, unfortunately, compared to me for a period of 5 to 7 years. Like, I know Carl Nassib, like, not well, but I was excited for him, man. It was like in that video, you could just see that he was just so, it was such a strong move, dude. You know, like the way he did it, and there's no right or wrong way to come out of the closet. I could never imagine the undue burden that is. But the way he just was like, hey, I'm getting right to the point. I'm excited, you know, to play football. Like, I'm making a donation. He's going to be a really good ambassador, I think. And like, when you get into saying, oh, that guy's going to be a good ambassador, that means some guys wouldn't be as good as him. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I think he's going to be a good ambassador. And I think it helps. I think people got into this big thing about parsing the language of active player. And hey, is this erasure of Michael Sam? Can we get into this deeper conversation about how we break the news? When a lot of the people arguing over that shit are the progressive type of people who should be going to bat for Carl Nassib, but instead we're arguing about Michael Sam. That was my issue with it.
Right.
You know, like, certainly homophobia is a societal problem. As much as it is in society, you want to know how big a problem it is in NFL locker rooms? Society, NFL locker rooms, same thing. You know,
well, that is what my point, which I probably didn't explain in a more clear manner, which I should have, is Okay, so he makes his announcement.
Right.
Universally praised by the media, universally praised right. by fans, for the most part, minus the group of homophobes. So now the next sort of hurdle's not even the right word there, but now his next step comes in August in the locker room with his teammates and on right. the field with his peers. And I'm sure I would be willing to bet the majority of NFL players are totally cool and it's really not a big deal to them. Yeah. But it would be nice if the guy was reassured, like, hey, you know, good job.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. There's a difference. I think sometimes players don't realize the power that they have. And I think also, like, they, like I said earlier, they don't sit there and ready to weigh in on everything because they might not use the app as much as we do. Like, I used the app a fuck ton when I was a player because my brain doesn't stop. So when I got home, like when other guys were just playing PlayStation, you know, like, you know, I might be tweeting or reading my, like, not every football player uses Twitter a lot.
Right.
But at the same time, like, yes, I would have been really excited to have seen like players come out and rally around him because, and I got into this with the Michael Sam thing, which of course the only reason I was talking about it was because people were fucking bringing it up. Like, we want more guys like Carl to be able to live their truth. That is the healthiest thing for any human being. And it certainly is an admirable, you know, respected action to take because you know how much you're swimming upstream as an athlete in a macho sport trying to make that announcement. So, like, I think if anything, it would have been reassuring for not Carl, because I think he knows what locker rooms are like, and I think he'll know, and there will be some challenges that he might not have realized in his past 8 years that he's in the league that will come up when he rejoins his team. But I think he knows locker rooms. I think where it would signal like a really positive thing would be for the next guy that's considering coming out. That, like, right. hey, there was all this support. And I've done this, and this is not a study or anything, but you look at an NFL locker room, I would venture to guess over 50% of the guys do not care, like, at all, dude. Like, good for you. Like, just like anything. And I would say 10% of guys are homophobic, like problematically homophobic. That's like society. Actually, the rates might be higher in society. And then the difference, the 40% or less than 40% that I'm leaving on the table in the in-between are guys that maybe they're not homophobic, but maybe have some work to do on like how they digest the news, or like that they're, a lot of guys grew up in houses where they were told from a young age that this is not okay. And they were very religious and that sort of thing. I'm not making an excuse for those guys, but those guys are going to have an opportunity to learn, and they just have to learn fast and catch up.
Right.
And I think that's what'll happen, dude. Like, I think for the most part, guys will support him. I know that because I was in a locker room with Michael Sam. Okay. Right. We were the best D-line in the league and we drafted Michael Sam. Okay. The reason I refuted the whole Michael Sam was blackballed thing, and I talked about it on the pod and I talked about it at length on Twitter with Joel Anderson, who's a great dude. And we kind of hashed out, like, we really didn't have that much of a difference. But the reason I refute that isn't to step on somebody who's trying to be, who people are trying to make into an icon. He's already an icon. Michael Sam's an icon. He did something incredibly brave. I mean, like, the reason Carl Nassib is able to do what he's doing is at least in part because of what Michael Sam did. The problem with trying to make him into a martyr now without the evidence to make him into a martyr is that, guess who's watching? Guess who's reading the internet? Guess who's listening to pundits say he was blackballed? Because there's such a groupthink on the internet that people are like, well, I read it on Twitter, so it's true. And I would hate for the next kid to be like, Michael Sam was blackballed. Locker rooms don't handle Carl Nassib or Michael Sam with respect. Guys don't welcome guys like that with open arms, because it's not true, dude. I was there in that locker room. And the reason Michael Sam didn't make that team is because he wasn't good enough to make it. And that doesn't mean he's not an awesome dude or somebody that we admired for what he did. He just wasn't good enough to make the team.
Right.
And that's okay.
Well, the other thing too is when the Michael Sam thing, what ends up happening is, especially people who are not into sports, they don't want to hear about the sports
angle
of this. Like, nuance. Michael Sam wasn't good. That's a factor in this. Even with Colin Kaepernick, like, I think Colin Kaepernick completely got screwed. Yeah. You want to use the word blackballed? I'll use the word. I wouldn't have a problem with someone saying that. He got a completely raw deal. He should have been in the league all these years. But when people now say like such and such team should sign Colin Kaepernick,
it's an absurd take.
The guy hasn't played in 4 years. You can't just go back into the NFL after you haven't played in 4 years. First of all, he'll be in a hospital from injuries.
That's how the NFL made it a self-fulfilling prophecy there. I mean, like, you know, and that's the thing is like, obviously Cap got blackballed on at least some level. Right. I think when people go to extrapolate, like automatically that then every team wasn't willing to sign him. I don't know that to be true, but I know that a blackballing, you know, there has to be some,
conspiracy.
And yeah. I do believe there was one.
Me too. Yeah.
When it came to Michael Sam, the league didn't want anything more than Michael Sam to stick. I really do believe that.
I agree too.
And it just didn't work out, and that's okay. And the reason we're bringing it back up is because people were bringing it up
right.
to try to make it seem like not only were we erasing Michael Sam's, you know, if you want to get hung up on that language, I get it. It's for people that don't know, like a first active player, the reason that matters and not to split hairs here is because Carl Nassib is going to make tackles on Sundays in front of millions and millions of people.
Right.
Like Michael Sam, who played well in preseason, you know, with his group at the end of the games, he was making those plays in front of 5,000-10,000 people. I mean, right. those games are barely on TV. Like if a bomb went off at the Edward Jones Dome, like people don't know until the next week. So I'm just telling you the first active player, it does mean something. It does not negate Michael Sam's contribution. And if we're talking about history, like it's important that people know what was true and what wasn't true, because I would hope that the next guy feels really encouraged to come out.
Yeah.
And players have a lot to do with that, too, in that, you know, if they drop the ball on not supporting Carl Nassib publicly, what they might not realize is that there is a difference between being accepting, like you could be incredibly accepting of Carl Nassib, but afraid to celebrate his decision. You have to be willing to celebrate people that need the celebration.
Well, I'm not going to get into it, but that's where the religious part of this comes from. Because what took me aback was when I tweeted this about where are the bigger name NFL players?
I don't think it's just religion. I do think part of it's religion.
The blowback I got was two things. It was either one from dopes who were like, well, who cares? It's not a big deal, which, as you just said, it is a big deal because there hasn't been an active player who's had to deal with opponents, fans, media during a regular season. Michael Sam didn't deal with any of that. So this is new ground. So the people say, who cares? That's why they're dopes. And then the other people were like, why should someone support him? What if they don't agree because of their religious beliefs and God says this is wrong and the religion says this is wrong?
Well, then that person can kind of like just keep quiet about it and let people live their fucking lives. But there's enough people that should be supporting Carl Nassib.
Right.
And, you know, like I like you would have liked to see more guys, you know, celebrate him. But I also don't think that anybody thinks of it as like, if I don't do it, nobody will. Right. And that's the problem is if enough people think like that, then what you get is like kind of this deafening silence. And I'm not saying Carl feels that way because I think he's self-assured enough and like knows the game and knows his teammates and knows if he can play ball, like his teammates are going to love him.
And if you saw him on Hard Knocks, you know, he's got the personality to handle this.
He's funny as shit, dude. Yeah, he's sure. Good in the locker room. And so I think he's going to be great. But to your point, yes, it would have been nice to see a little bit more like, hey, and I don't think it's just religious like trepidation. I also think there is like very naturally like a macho kind of like, hey, if I celebrate Carl Nassib, you got to realize like we played in a sport that'll make you insecure, even if you're not.
Right.
And guys would never admit that because some of the hardest dudes are the most insecure. But like you might be afraid to be the one guy again. If you like, I do it because I don't give a fuck. Like, what the fuck? I don't care if you think something about me either way because I'm celebrating Carl Nassib. Like, who gives a fuck? Like,
right. Oh yeah, yeah.
Then
yeah.
I don't really care what you think.
Right.
But I can't expect everybody else to have that attitude because there is a fearfulness of stepping out and being the only one. And JJ did it, but the second, third, fourth, fifth name didn't happen.
I
to
thought
the point
after
where guys felt comfy.
Right. I thought after JJ's tweet, we'd see some more, but there wasn't any. But I do think, I mean, I do wonder if a part of it is, you know, like you were talking before about, about 50% of the players don't have a problem with it, 10% still have that. You know, I'm sure, listen, you played on three teams, right? The Rams, the Patriots, and the Eagles.
Right.
For whatever many years. you played with other gay players besides Michael Sam, whether
no question,
whether you knew it or you didn't know it. I mean, maybe someone, you know, you maybe someone said it to you in confidence. Maybe you they didn't say it, but you knew. I mean, so this is the first time someone is open about it. But I'm sure NFL players throughout the league have had a gay teammate that they've known about.
Dude, look how many guys have came out after they retired.
Right, right, right.
So I mean, there's a ton of. And the whole thing is, man, like, don't you want people to live in their truth, and don't you want them to tell you who they are? And that's not like, it's not a big deal to me. It's, and I like, maybe it's a bigger deal to somebody who grew up in like a Southern Baptist household. And I'm not going to be the, like, we give people a lot of leeway when it comes to religion around the world, right? Like, you can get away with all types of crazy shit if you just blame religion. I'm not going to be the person to just like, absolutely obliterate somebody because they learned in Bible school that that's not normal. But in 2021, it is. Like, that's right. The way the world is, dude. And you should be at least compassionate enough to realize that, like, hey, your worldview is just different than somebody else's. And it's perfectly okay if maybe you're not going to raise your kid that way. You know, that like, to, I don't know if it's perfectly okay, but I'm not going to litigate your household. But what you can't do is be like, what you can't be is a fucking asshole to people. You know what I mean? Because the world's pretty big, dude.
Now, I'm going to stay on one more controversial. That topic shouldn't be controversial, but.
Yeah, no. We build the controversy around it. That's what we do.
Right. I think in August, when training camps start, we're getting ready for the NFL season. I think the biggest story in sports is going to be how many NFL players are not vaccinated.
Mm.
Now, I will say this. I've seen some numbers recently that are much more impressive than I thought they would be. Half the NFL teams have 51 or more players vaccinated. That's a pretty good stat. But
yeah,
that's a pretty good stat. So maybe I'm overblowing it. But when I saw what happened with the Bills, where they have a ton of players who are not going to get vaccinated.
Right.
And I'm sure there's many other players or not. I'm just wondering if you could tell me as a former player, if you're in that locker room, and I guess they're still going to have rules here. Like if you're not vaccinated, you can't eat in the restaurants, but you can't eat with the team. And it seems like they're going that way where there's going to sort of separate non-vaccinated and vaccinated players. Would you be like, can a team leader say to someone, hey, listen, I'm at the point where I don't think, forget what your profession is, NFL player or not. If someone doesn't want to get vaccinated and you tell them you should get vaccinated, they're not going to listen to you. That you're not changing anyone's mind.
No. And so,
but in a team, listen, if someone I work, if one of my SI.com colleagues doesn't get vaccinated, it has no effect on my life. But in a team sport where you need to be in locker rooms, in film rooms and on airplanes, do you think you can change someone's mind about it?
Maybe somebody who doesn't have the information, and trust me, I can take a swing at it. But, you know, as a leader, I think a lot of what you have to do is it's not tell people what to do. It's to convince them what to do.
Right.
You know, it's to sell something to them. Like being a leader is being a salesman. And some people might be like, well, no, you got to just tell people what to do. Well, I've been there in the NFL, and I just know that like these are a bunch of grown men, and the convictions that I have, whether they're well-informed or not well-informed, are not any stronger than other guys' convictions. And so I think like, hey, like if you're on the plane and there's this anti-vaxxer dude, if I'm sitting next to Cole Beasley, I'll debate him, you know, like I'll debate him. Like I'll talk about, or I'll tell him to like, stop whining about it. And if you're not going to get shot when you make a bold stance, like just shut the fuck up and be bold, dude. And I'm not just talking about Cole Beasley, because I feel like we stepped on Cole Beasley as the internet.
Well, he deserves it because when
he stepped out. So no, but wait. The point I'm making is he deserves it. But we've given other guys passes about
because they haven't said stuff as stupid. Here's the thing.
He went like if you just said I'm not getting vaccinated and then you don't go on that big diatribe. That's my point. Like,
right,
then people 100%. Aren't going to be on your ass. Like, don't be making some crazy shit up and don't make yourself into a martyr. Like,
100%. And here's the issue. It's not that Cole Beasley, I mean, listen, it is an issue, but it's not that Cole Beasley is not getting vaccinated he tweeted, quote, when did we get so big on science? The fuck?
I have no idea.
What? What?
But the point is, if we're really concerned with public health and that sort of thing, like, there's way more. You just said it, like, it's a good thing that 50 players on a team are vaccinated. Like, I know of some teams, I've heard of a couple teams that like 20 guys aren't vaccinated. Like, you're not just dealing with Cole Beasley. Okay.
Well, so, there's that, like, whole Bills team has it. Josh Allen and Poyer, so, that, the whole team's not.
And listen, as a leader, and I hadn't thought about this, I think my job is to sell people on, like, hey, the reasons maybe that you should get vaccinated. And also, the restrictions in the NFL, like, I cannot believe people are like, I'm doing this bold thing, this revolutionary thing, and I'm not getting vaccinated. And then they want to complain. Like, I get it. It's a motherfucker. And the NFL is basically nudging you to do something, but they're also a private business and they can kind of do what they want, bro.
Any private business can.
That's kind of where we are.
Right.
And if you have an issue with it, get a shot and then you don't have to grab and go in the cafeteria, dude.
Right.
Like,
but then,
again, my job is to convince you. That's, if right. anything, that's
but
it.
Like a cold, like, listen, maybe I'm being hard. Cole Beasley will never be convinced to get the vaccine. You could just tell. I mean, when the guy says, when did we get so big on science? You're not changing that guy's mind. Now, the guy on the Washington football team, Montez
Sweat.
Sweat. Well, I need to learn more about the vaccine. And then he gets mad that the football team brought in a doctor to talk to the football team. Like, what do we, like?
I just think we've gotten to this place where we say we want to know more. We just want to know more from the people that are going to tell us what we want to know, you know, what we want to hear. And I really do, to your point, like, the internet will try to encourage people to go change people's minds on shit.
Right.
And, like, yes, you can try, but chances are somebody's already tried with a lot of these guys. The only thing that's going to teach them
100%, right.
is either, like, getting sick or doing more reading or just making a decision that, like, this isn't a sign of weakness, that you're not giving into, like, the government,
right?
Or, like, you know, you're not being right. coerced, like,
manipulated. Yeah.
The only thing that's going to change their mind, probably, a lot of these guys, is going through a year where it just fucking sucks.
Well, that's the thing. I think if there are more things where, like, you can't do it if you're not, you know, there was a big controversy with the Foo Fighters because they did a concert. And you can only get in if you were vaccinated. And the anti-vaxxers were pissed about, you know, their freedoms and First Amendment and Second Amendment and Eighth Amendment. And they make
which
up
they
amendments.
Which they all know very well.
Right. And, of, you know, and my body, my choice. Yeah, it's your right. body. You have a choice. You made the choice not to get the vaccine. So now you can't get into the fucking concert. Shut up.
Dude, everybody else is pulling a different way. And that's fine. Like, you know, like, and yes, we would like to get herd immunity. I'm not a doctor and I don't know shit.
Well, everyone on Twitter
shit I don't know, but I'm also not a DIY guy. Like, when my pipes are broken, I call the plumber. I've said this before. I'm not doing my own research. You can call me a fool. Yes, I read, if that's what you mean. I listen to other people's. Yeah, I read the internet, if that's what you mean. I read other people's takes that oppose mine. But at the end of the day, I've been listening to doctors and scientists my entire life.
Right.
Okay. And I know they're not always right. I just don't understand why, if we were trying to poison a population or something, why we would pick this, because this is too obvious. Isn't it too obvious?
Well, every time someone starts with, you know, they're trying to control us, I try to find out who's they, and then what is the purpose exactly? Like, I don't understand. What's the benefit of controlling us?
Somebody's listening, right. rolling their eyes and be like, bro, you don't look watch enough YouTube, but right, send me the YouTube links. I have not been convinced that, you know, I'd rather stay home a lot. And that's the thing, is like, a lot of people are still caring for people who can't be exposed to this. You know, like, they still know people who can't be exposed to this. Like, people have parents, people have uncles, people have grandparents. Like, we're just,
well, that I think, that what I think is interesting about the NFL with players not getting vaccinated. Okay, fine. Those players are 22, 23, 24, 25, 26. But you have, I don't know why this is still the case. And I think
coaches.
There should be an instant investigation to that. But, like, NFL coaches are like 70, 80 years old looking like, you know.
Well, I just think it's funny. And as a, like, I know this is one of those easy dunks, but, like, the side of the aisle that's always just like blowing America's greatest generation is now telling America's generation to just stay home because we got to get on with our lives and I don't feel like getting vaccinated.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there are still people that cannot move the way, you know what I mean? And so I just think it'd be nice if people didn't try to outthink themselves sometimes. Yeah. I know I sound probably to a conspiracy theorist like an idiot, and that's fine.
That's fine. All right. Enough of that. Let's get to some. It's 4th of July weekend, so we got to close this out with some with some stuff here. I had Schrager from Good Morning Football on this pod the week before Memorial Day, and I asked him to power rank the summer holidays: Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. He gave me a wrong answer. I'm going to give you the opportunity now to power rank those.
No problem. I'll go Memorial Day. I'll go Labor Day, and then I'll go 4th of July.
Ding, 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 ding. You have the correct answer.
I'll tell you why. Number one, Memorial Day is actually, there's a real meaning to the holiday, which I know people fuck up a lot, but you're supposed to be remembering those who've fallen, you know, serving our country. And so it's a good opportunity to do a little reflection, like to, you know, our foundation does a little something. But it's also a really nice time in the summer to get together and drink beer and float down the river and barbecue and whatever. And that's fine. Like, as long as you're doing both. And it's not as pressure packed as, to me, the 4th of July. 4th of July, and this is the reason it goes on the back end, it's incredibly pressure packed. It's overly patriotic. Okay. And patriotism, I used to really like patriotism, but somebody hijacked it. So now I'm not as like excited about patriotism, and that might piss you off and kiss my ass. Like, whatever, dude. Another thing is fireworks. Okay. Fireworks are fucking cool if you're not responsible for them. Fireworks that you're setting off or watching your brother set off or watching like your kids sit next to, think about where they made these fireworks. Like, you talk about, you don't trust the scientists, but you trust some kid in a factory halfway around the world. You know, that bottle rocket's not going to just turn right back on you and your family. Okay, enough said. 4th of July, too much pressure. The fireworks are dangerous. And quite frankly, it's just too hot. Labor Day, don't know anything about it. Used to be during football season, so I never really got to enjoy it. So for me, it's like a fresh start on a holiday. That'll go to 4th of July 3rd.
Correct answer. You and Schrags have different... You look at it different because you guys are in the football business, but I love Labor Day because it's the end of the summer, which sucks because of the heat, and then it's the start of the football season and the gambling season. Like, listen, you could gamble on the NBA and you, whatever, maybe you do a little hockey, but the gambling season starts with the NFL and college football.
When you really start, when you really start lying to your family, starts Labor Day,
right? Exactly. You know exactly. I mean? Right. You know, and you also have what you can also do. See, now that you're not a player, you do this trick too. On Sundays, when someone's, you got to do this, wedding, this, you got to go here. Can't. Got to watch football for work.
Yeah.
So you have that. Fourth of July sucks strictly for one reason, the fireworks. Fireworks are atrocious.
And anybody in all the Fourth of July like fanatics are like anti-Juneteenth. And I'm like, hey, that's another one we should be celebrating. I like, as soon as my black friends tell me like it's okay to celebrate as just Joe White guy Juneteenth, like I cannot fucking wait, dude. That is going to be the best one of them all.
It's a good time.
And when it comes to
the
4th of July, man, like I'm fine with two Independence Days because that's legitimately, you know, it's the truth. Yeah.
4th of July would be better if there were no fireworks, but it's third on the list. I'm going to give you one more and then I'll let you go. You're at a 4th of July barbecue, and the person running the grill has got burgers, dogs, and sausage. What are you grabbing first?
Burgers going first. I hope it's a charcoal grill. The hot dogs are going second. And listen, no offense to anybody that likes like a brat or something, but that's a harsh thing on your upper digestive tract. I just feel like it just sits there for a while and it like, it's like it time releases. Like, I don't know if that's indigestion or what it is, like heartburn.
It's powerful for the heartburn. There's
yeah. No, and to me, if you're asking me what tastes the best, like if I'm drunk at 2 a.m, cause this is the best time to ask me, what are you hungriest for? I'm hungriest for the hot dog followed by the hamburger followed by the brat. The problem on the 4th of July is that you don't want to eat 6 hot dogs in the middle of the day. You can do 6 hamburgers. You can't do 6 hot dogs. That's going to just sit there. and the brat to me is not no fly zone,
right,
but not really my thing.
See, maybe this is the Italian in me, but what you need to do is try out the thin Italian sausage, the ring. Okay. It's usually like cheese and parsley in there.
Okay.
Not as bad on the with the heartburn and the indigestion. The but you, and you can throw that. What I do, this is a fat person trick. I take that and I put it on the hot dog bun.
Oh, got it.
I have it that way.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's not bad. That's not bad at all. This fourth, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll have one brat for the sports media podcast.
I wasn't even meaning brat. I'm more of I'm talking about the Italian sausage.
The Italian sausage.
Sausage and peppers. And
Yeah, no, that's good. But it's also hot as fuck, dude.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a problem. It's definitely a problem.
And I put ketchup on my hot dog.
Yeah, people get all worked up. I think, I mean, ketchup is vile, so I'm not going to get worked up to it. I don't put it on anything, so it's
yeah,
fine.
But I mean, like, you just, some people, like, listen.
Oh, that, yeah, that's like saying, you know, I wish you had cancer, basically, if you tell someone.
Only in Chicago. They've definitely gone all out on the identity, the hot dog identity thing.
Right, right.
So.
All right, well, these are good takes. That's
okay,
why, that's why
we'll
I have
see.
You on.
We'll see tomorrow.
We'll see tomorrow. No, I mean, listen, the most important thing is you got the holiday power rankings right. That's the most important.
That's good. That's good. We're on the same page.
And we both don't like fireworks. Unless
they're fucking cool to hire somebody to do them, but right. I don't need to lose a finger or something.
Definitely don't need
By the way, JPP deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because he's still a better football player than I ever could have been with like eight fingers. That guy's unbelievable.
That is an all-time sports story right there.
Yep.
All-timer. All right, Chris, Green Light Pod, check it out. He's the best. Appreciate
Jimmy,
it.
Jimmy, appreciate right. you.
Be well. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, man.
All right, it's time for the weekly Trina Thought segment, and that means it's time for my buddy Sal Cotter to join the show from WFAN and SNY in New York. Sal, love the Mr. Perfect t-shirt you're wearing.
Thank you.
On Zoom.
This is a new one from Homage.
For those watching on YouTube, Mr. Perfect.
He was my favorite aside from Hogan. He was always my second favorite.
I would say top three 80s heels were Piper, Mr. Perfect, and Rick Rude.
Yeah.
That
I like
would be
all, I like all three, though. I mean, I was, as you know, I was a Hogan guy, but Mr. Perfect was my top heel, so to speak. All three of those guys were great, though.
Perfect, Rude, and Piper. I'm, you know, much better than like King Kong Bundy, Slaughter. Who else would like the heels that Hogan would beat in all his boring matches?
Good question.
I mean, he gets Savage, but Savage was more of a face than a heel, I think.
Earthquake.
Yeah, not great. Not
a
great.
A little bit of One Man Gang.
Jake
Boss
the Snake,
Man.
But Jake the Snake never. Man. Yeah, Boss Man. But the other those guys were better.
Yeah.
Jake the Snake should probably get in that list with Perfect and Rude and Piper. But
well, he was a good guy before then.
Right.
Right. I mean, maybe he started bad, then he was good
during
that time, and then he went back to being bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have a ton of thoughts. I mean, listen, people are going to get pissed that I'm going into like New York stuff, but Brian Cashman has to get fired.
Yeah.
He has to. He's been here since 1998. He's won one World Series that he was responsible for that he built in 2009 because they spent $8 billion. They developed no players. They developed less starting pitchers. And if you're not going to fire him now, this is my issue that I went off about on Twitter this week, but no one has an answer. If you're not going to fire him now, he has the job for life then. Then when do you fire him? He's there forever. He's allowed to just do, he's never allowed to have anything get checked. He's there forever.
Your tweets were great. It was fun watching it. I've basically been saying the same thing. Now, the difference is I'm not a Yankee fan. And I've been very patient with Cashman, but I've basically been saying the same thing for the last few weeks. Everybody's talking about Aaron Boone, and I couldn't agree with you more. That's irrelevant. He's a data applicator. He's not
nothing.
A manager.
Right.
Right. So Cashman and these bringing in Giancarlo Stanton, letting Didi go, moving Gleyber Torres to short, extending Aaron Hicks, extending Severino, missing on Pineda, Paxton, Sonny Gray. I mean, you add up all these different moves for not trading Andujar or Frazier to make the pieces fit a little bit better. This is the team that he built. It is stale. It is stagnant. If this were any other organization, we'd be saying time for a change with the hierarchy. But yet with Cashman, it seems like he's untouchable.
And here's my other issue. You went through all of the moves. Put that aside. How about this? How about like we just change the voice now? He's been here since 98. It's right. Time to change the voice. People say, oh, he's been a good GM. Yeah, he has. It's time to change. It's not working. Whatever's going on is not working. So at some point, like, again, if this doesn't, if he keeps his job through this, then he's here for life. Like, I mean, they're not going to have a season. They're not going to have a season where they're like 21-51 in August. Like, that's not going to happen with the Yankees, just based on who they have in their team. So bad for the Yankees is 500, right, basically. So he, that's it. He never has to do better. I don't get it.
Well, and how about fourth place in the division behind even Toronto? And when you look at them play the Red Sox or the Rays, they're not even close. So you're right. The record, most teams would kill to have, you know, be two games over 500 or around 500. The Yankees, it's a little bit different. And it's funny, though, you mentioned just time for a change. And I agree with that. You know, he's made some great moves, too. I referenced some of the bad ones. But obviously, he's made some great moves that I think a lot of teams would benefit greatly from having Cashman and some of the guys that he would bring with him potentially to a front office. However, it is time for a change. The same thing that he said about Joe Girardi after Game 7 ALCS 2017, after Girardi overachieved with that group, his reasoning was, oh, Joe's a great manager, just time for a change. Well, guess what? Now his time has come, because he's been here way too long.
100%. And that is right. That team that Girardi led to that was not a good team.
They were supposed to be rebuilding that year.
Right. Did you watch The Shop with Tom Brady
by any chance? From the clips. I didn't watch the whole episode, although I probably, what is it, on HBO?
HBO Max, I think. I don't know if it's on TV anymore. It might just be on the HBO Max.
Yeah, if I can remember my passcode to sign in, I'll check it out. But yes, I saw your clips of it on there. And it is interesting to watch him loosen up a little bit.
He's Brady. Become a fascinating I mean, it's funny because someone said to me he's everywhere now, but he still doesn't say a ton. Like, he still manages the narrative very well. But he did the James Corden thing last week where he was singing Hamilton and Nelly. And obviously, he's doing a little. I think everything he's doing now is promo for that fake golf thing. But it's funny to see him with the Patriot chains off of him.
Isn't it social media, though, where really he starts to let loose? Like, I know a lot of people maybe even aren't on there, you know, as far as a major reach. But for our purposes, I feel like he's loosened up on social media, and that's what connects him. And then you see all the other stuff. It's different just seeing him wasted in public at the Super Bowl parade. You're right. It's ever since he left the Patriots, we're seeing a different Tom Brady.
I think he has people doing his social media. He probably does some stuff and, you know, but he has a team. But in these interviews now, I mean, just his whole thing about saying, you know, oh, if that team has a shitty corner, I say, oh, I don't know how I'm going to throw to him. And then I'm like, I'm going at that motherfucker all day. I mean, it's unbelievable. I think it's funny because I do think when you get to a certain level of fame and money that he has attained, you can't be a real person, so to speak. But he seems like he can, like, be a dude you'd want to hang out with and shoot the shit with. Like, he's showing that personality. Like, you know, listen, I know people want to bring up issues like DeFlakey and all that nonsense, but, like, he's got a personality. And, like, I hope whenever he retires in about 10 years, he goes into media, because I think he'd be great.
Yeah, I agree with that. I never thought of that before this little run that we've seen here the last year and a half. But you're right. He'd probably be great with that. I don't know if he's going to want to do that.
Right.
But I would love to see him. And you're right. I've always had great respect for him because he won. I wouldn't call myself a Tom Brady fan necessarily or a Patriots fan. But you have to respect what they've done. But to see his personality like this, I'm with you. He's very likable to me. And I don't care about the Deflategate stuff and the spy. I don't get any of that stuff. Yeah. I think Tom Brady's come across very likable. You're showing his personality.
Did you watch the Dan Patrick interview with Scottie Pippen?
That I saw again from your Twitter feed. What is Scottie Pippen's deal, man? He's just ripping on everybody.
I said this on Twitter. I mean, I thought Dan was brilliant because Dan did not say much. He really let Pippen dig himself into the hole. And what I found fascinating was, listen, he has his own experience with Phil Jackson. I'm not going to dispute that. If that's how he feels, that's his take from his experience. What I couldn't believe was the latter part, where he's sounded so paranoid about Jordan and the cameras and it's all being filmed from Michael. You could tell, the bottom line is, you could tell he was pissed about The Last Dance.
Yeah, because it painted him in a bad light. So he was obviously upset by that. And now he's on his revenge tour. It seems taking out everybody in the way. Phil Jackson, Charles Barkley. I mean, he's ripping out, obviously, Michael Jordan himself. So, look, you're right. Who am I to say whether Phil Jackson is racist or not? I'm not there. Scottie Pippen's right. He was there in those locker rooms. However, from the outside, you can say a lot of things about Phil Jackson. I'm not sure being a racist would be one. But again, I have no idea. So if Pippen feels that way, fine. It's not just that, though. Pippen is going on a tour here, ripping everybody apart. KD, he's going to him. So I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit – when you start ripping everybody, that to me is a sign that maybe the individual who's doing the ripping has the issue.
Here's – I also get the impression – he does not want to. He doesn't want to hear about the fact that he didn't go. He refused to go back into the game. You could just tell he is like. But it's like, dude, I understand. Like, okay, so you're saying that Phil Jackson drew up the play for Kukoc because he's white. Okay, let's say I give you that. You still have to go back into the game. Like, you just can't. You have a team there, and you have 11 other teammates. You can't just sit on the bench. Like, there's just no defense for that, and I think he knows that. So he throws all this other shit at the wall, and it's just like. I don't know.
I think it comes, not to play therapist here, but it comes from just years of being second fiddle to Michael and insecurity. And he referenced it in that interview saying, this is the 1 year that I was supposed to be the guy to get the final shot. You're giving it to this freaking guy, Tony Kukoc? Give me a break.
But Kukoc wasn't chopped liver. I mean, he was a good
player. But in Pippen's mind, no, I get what you're saying. And look, he killed the Knicks.
So and he made the shot. That's where Pippen loses a lot. Yeah. You complaining, but the play Jackson drew up worked, and Kukoc made the shot. So at some point, you got to just, you know, maybe be quiet for a second about it.
But you could understand to a certain extent why he might feel slighted or frustrated. Absolutely. Thinking all these years I got to live in Jordan shadow. He's out of here, and now they're drawing up plays for Tony freaking Kukoc when I've been doing the hard work all this time. So I can understand.
I get that part of it. But at the end, when he's talking about the cameras and then who are they they're leading to, like, okay, yeah. There's a documentary being filmed about Michael Jordan, so they showed up. But the truth is still the truth.
Right.
Like, they made the, you know, Jordan Paxson made the shot. Jordan gave it. Like, that's still what happened. Like, doesn't matter what the camera showed.
Yeah. I don't care if Pippen's upset with it. I loved it. I thought it was great entertainment. Take us behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly, there were other issues there that, you know, like I said, it did paint him in a bad light, but that did happen. So, I mean, to your point, really, what can he say about him, you know, sitting out or him having an issue with some of the other stuff with Jordan? So, I think Pippen, look, he's on a revenge story here. He's taking out everybody who's getting in his way.
That's absolutely true. All right, the last thing, because I got to get this in, because – I don't care what's happening in sports with the NBA final, NBA, whatever, conference finals, baseball, whatever else is going on. The only story I care about right now is Free Britney.
Right.
This is a 39-year-old woman who's basically being held captive. How is this allowed?
I don't get it. Can I ask you something about this? And yes. I paid attention to it here. What is the deal with the father? Because they just read that he's
the
running
father's
some,
a piece
like,
of crap.
Truck.
That's what the deal is.
He's running a food truck. He's living in a trailer.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
That doesn't add up. I would think he's been sitting on her millions or whatever. And
my guess would be he's probably sitting on the millions, but doesn't want people to know he has the millions that he probably pilfered from her. And, you know, it's a bad look for him, especially right now, because the whole thing, this has been building and building and building on social media. I know you probably don't know that.
No, for years it's been going on. I watched that Britney special.
Those documentaries came out and really shed a lot of light on what's going on. But to hear her voice, and she has curfews. She's 39.
Well, how is it legal for that to happen? Like, when did this take place? Because she had mental instability for a while. They had to turn it over.
Well, that's the issue. She probably needed someone to be in charge of her life at some point back when she was having these severe mental issues.
Right.
But the fact that it would last this long is absurd.
And it's her own father who's doing, I mean, that is just.
And there's a lot of stuff about how, like, they made her, you know, do tours or do concerts and stuff, and they're taking the money and making her, and like,
she was sick, she didn't want to perform.
Right.
I mean, how about the fact that you can control if she's pregnant or not? If she could get pregnant? How is that? How could anybody not see that and be like, no, this is wrong?
How is this allowed? How is this allowed? It's unbelievable.
Sickening.
I feel so. When I heard that, I was like, the woman's being held captive and no one's doing anything about it. How is this going on?
It's like a bad TV show or a bad movie where you're watching and you're thinking, oh, come on, this has to end well. And for her, unfortunately, this is her real life and this is living in it. I do think that because of the attention now that it's gotten, I would hope that somebody's going to do the right thing.
Well, I'm going to say, if this judge or this court or whatever, I don't know the legalities of it, but if they uphold the conservatorship, they're going to go there and cause a riot at that courtroom. I mean, they better, you know, that's going to blow up the story even more. They better let her be free. That's all I have to say.
It's a fine line, though, because if I don't look. We know what we know from her, right? What she's displayed publicly here. But let's just say it is somebody, not her. It could be some anybody that does have serious mental issues. How do you, as a judge, then decide when you turn over that control to them?
But I think when this first started, and the father got the conservatorship over her because of her mental issues, I think it was supposed to be for money. Like, so she didn't just get rid of all her money, right, spend her money, have people take advantage of her and then lose all her money.
Right.
But now this has become way more about money based on everything she said. Curfews, can't do this, can't do that. Can't,
God,
the
right.
boyfriend, they can't.
Married, pregnancy, right. right.
It's terrible. Not just about her earnings now.
Right.
It's about her just trying to be a human being in society.
Which, it's just wrong. It's as
right.
simple as that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Line.
All right. Free Britney. All right. And I'll free you. Thanks for coming on. We'll see you next week. Be well.
All right. Yep. All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Al. All right. My thanks to Chris Long and Sal Licata for taking the time on this week's episode of the SI Media Podcast. If you've missed recent episodes and you're not a subscriber, make sure you subscribe and check out those past episodes. Jim Ross, if you're a wrestling fan, great stuff last week on whether Vince McMahon is getting ready to sell WWE. John O'Ran from Sports Business Journal was on the pod as well last week. Stu Gatz from the Dan Le Batard Show recently was a guest. Doris Burke and Evan Longoria on the pod as well in the past month. So go into the archives, check those out, rate, review, subscribe. All right, that wraps it up for this week's episode. Happy 4th, stay safe, and we'll see you next week. Take care.